This week, after having spent several weeks studying the introductory chapters of the book of Proverbs, we begin discussing the Proverbs themselves with a lesson on one of the most prominent ideas in the book, being righteous. There are hundreds of Proverbs with a wide variety of moral lessons, but if they are sorted and grouped, there are a handful of major themes that stand out. Among these themes is that of being righteous, which is addressed in something like 1/8 of the Proverbs. Righteousness is obedience to God, and the Proverbs tell us over and over again that there will be blessings for obedience, long life, and prosperity, with curses like death and misery for disobedience. Today, we will sample those Proverbs. You have no particular passage to read this week, just a smattering of different verses throughout Proverbs chapters 10 through 29. I will cite many of those verses throughout this message. First, let's talk a little about the form of the book of Proverbs. This book has multiple authors, and it says as much right there in the text. Solomon wrote much of it, but others compiled what he wrote sometime afterward, and then apparently other compilers appended things which others had written as well. So the book is a bit of a hodgepodge and not very neatly organized. We've recently studied the opening of the book, chapters 1 through 9. After that, we have two separate courses of Solomon's Proverbs. The first course runs in chapters 10 through 22. The second course, which was copied down by King Hezekiah's men about 200 to 250 years after Solomon's death, runs in chapters 25 through 29. Between those two courses, running from the end of chapter 22 through chapter 24, we have 30 sayings of the wise. The author of those is unclear. In chapter 30, we have the words of Agur, son of Jakeh, and in chapter 31, we have the words of King Lemuel. All wise words, different authors, all compiled into one book. For the next few months, we will be considering verses drawn from the first and second course of Solomon's Proverbs without drawing any distinction between the two. We'll plan to save the sayings of the wise and the words of Agur and Lemuel for after that. Solomon's Proverbs are written primarily in couplets, sets of two lines, on wise topics, and they are copied seemingly at random. They are not organized by topic or at all, so far as I can tell. So in preparation for the next few months' sermons, I have endeavored to categorize each of the hundreds of Proverbs by topic so that we can consider the topics in an orderly fashion. Some of the Proverbs don't neatly fit into any category, and I'm guessing that any other person might organize them in a different way. At the end, I'm sure we'll have one wild lesson rounding up whatever was left over. I'm also going to make an effort to give each topic its due weight. Some topics have more verses than others, and I'm going to try to examine the topics that received more attention earlier and more frequently, with the topics that receive less attention later and less frequently. Among the most important topics are speech, money, and the rewards of wisdom itself. But the topic we're going to consider today is one which receives about as much attention and which I think foundationally undergirds the entire structure. Righteousness. Out of around 500 Proverbs, I counted 77 verses on righteousness, so it's a pretty important topic. It also lines up very neatly with the idea that the fear of the Lord and the hatred of evil are the beginning of wisdom. Among the Proverbs on righteousness, I have divided them up by their themes so that we can better consider them in a logical order. First, we have those Proverbs which describe for us what righteousness is as opposed to what wickedness is. Second, we have those which describe God's response to righteousness and wickedness. And third, we have the positive consequences of righteousness and the negative consequences of wickedness. Fourth, and finally, we have the human response to those. Without further ado, then, let's dig in. What is righteousness? Well, righteousness, we know, is obedience to God. That is, as we have discussed many times before, the difference between right and wrong. Proverbs 14:2 supports this. It says, "Whoever walks in uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is devious in his ways despises him." So fearing Jehovah makes a person upright, and despising him makes a person devious or wicked. Proverbs 10:29 adds further support. It says, "The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the blameless, but destruction to evildoers." That also makes sense. A righteous and thus blameless person will obey God's laws and find protection from God's laws, while a person who does evil will disobey God's laws and thus will earn destructive punishments. Proverbs 21:8 tells us that the way of the guilty is crooked, but the conduct of the pure is upright. Proverbs 21:29 tells us that a wicked man puts on a bold face, but the upright gives thought to his ways. So if you show the wicked man where he is wrong, as in by showing him the scriptures, he will double down on his wrong, boldly persisting in it. The righteous man, however, will be the one who will consider what he has done and will turn back to doing what is right. The righteous person then knows what is right, while the unrighteous person does not, and the righteous person becomes a source of wisdom, as Proverbs 10:31 and 32 demonstrate. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut off, and the lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. So the righteous person is the one who fears God, who obeys his laws, humbly accepts correction, and knows what is right. Being that kind of person, he leads others in a right way. Proverbs 12:26 says, "One who is righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray." Likewise, the righteous are morally uncompromising. When the wicked go astray and lead others astray, the righteous do not go along or cover up for them. Proverbs 25:26. Like a muddied spring or a polluted fountain is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. We have several verses that describe the righteous and the wicked by contrasting the two of them. Proverbs 10:16 tells us that the wage of the righteous leads to life, the gain of the wicked to sin. So when a good man's wealth grows, he uses it for beneficial purposes, and when a bad man's wealth grows, he uses it for immoral purposes. Proverbs 10:11 tells us that the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. So good people talk about doing beneficial things, while bad people talk about doing violent, destructive things. Proverbs 12:5 and 12:6 echo that sentiment, saying, "The thoughts of the righteous are just, the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers them." Proverbs 11:11 tells that, "By the blessing of the upright a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked it is overthrown." Wicked people are those who plot evil and seek rebellion. Proverbs 16:27 says, "A worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire." Proverbs 17:11 says that, "An evil man seeks only rebellion, and a cruel messenger will be sent against him." We note that all rebellion is not wrong. David was a rebel against the Philistines. This describes, apparently, the man who seeks after only rebellion, rebellion for rebellion's own sake. He is the rebel without a cause. Proverbs 12:20 says that deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but those who plan peace have joy. So we have a contrast between evil people who plan evil and have deceitful hearts and good people who plan peace and have joy. So what do we learn about righteousness? A righteous person fears Jehovah. He obeys his laws and benefits from his laws. He humbly submits himself to the truth. He learns what is right. He teaches it and he guides others. He does not give in to the wicked. He gives good counsel, which brings life. He is truthful and he plans peace, which results in joy. The wicked person, in contrast, does not fear God. He does not obey the rules, and so the consequences of the rules are harmful to him. He leads other people astray, plotting evil and deceitful things and lying in wait for innocent blood. I would suppose that no one perfectly exemplifies either of these things. In reality, we all fall on some spectrum between perfect righteousness and perfect wickedness. But these are the descriptors of the extremes, and as a general rule, there will be consequences that trend along with the behavior. Some of those consequences are a result of nature's response to the misconduct, and some of them are a result of God's supernatural intervention. God sees the wicked and the righteous. Proverbs 15:3 says that the eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. And God responds to that which he sees. Proverbs 12:2 says, "A good man obtains favor from the Lord, but a man of evil devices he condemns." He responds because he delights in the righteous, but the wicked are an abomination to him. Says Proverbs 11:20, "Those of crooked heart are an abomination to the Lord, but those of blameless ways are his delight." Proverbs 15:9 has a similar message. "The way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but he loves him who pursues righteousness." Proverbs 17:15 also says, "He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the righteous are both alike an abomination to the Lord." So it isn't enough to be righteous. One must also tolerate righteousness, tolerate it at least, and condemn wickedness. To close one's eyes and to turn one's head and ignore wickedness, acting as if wickedness is justifiable, is an abomination, as, of course, is condemning righteousness. The wicked should expect that even their prayers and sacrifices are an abomination to God. Proverbs 15:8 says, "The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is acceptable to him." Proverbs 28:9 says also, "If one turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer is an abomination." Proverbs 21:27, "The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. How much more when he brings it with evil intent?" Now, I'm not going to say that God will not forgive the penitent sinner, but he must be prepared to genuinely and humbly turn from his sin. If a man will callously continue in his wickedness, if he will scorn the law, then he should not expect God to hear him. And as we know and have discussed before, it is better to do right so that you do not need to offer prayers and sacrifices for forgiveness than it is to go ahead and do wrong and say sorry later. Proverbs 21:3 says, "To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice." So God sees your actions. He loves good, he rewards good, he hates evil, and he punishes evil. If you want God to hear your prayers and to reward you, you should do good. If you want God to despise you and your prayers, then you should do evil. And of course, as we have discussed many times, it is not just by supernatural divine intervention that righteousness is rewarding and that wickedness is punishing. Nature itself is designed with feedback loops that punish bad behavior and reward good behavior. Proverbs 11:3 is an example of this. "The integrity of the upright guides them, but the crookedness of the treacherous destroys them." Wickedness, by its nature, is self-defeating, and righteousness is self-rewarding. Other examples are found in Proverbs 11:5 and 11:6. "The righteousness of the blameless keeps his way straight, but the wicked falls by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright delivers them, but the treacherous are taken captive by their lust." Other verses with similar themes include Proverbs 11:8, 11:23, 13:6, 14:14, and 22:5. So what are the rewards or consequences of righteousness or the lack thereof? On the topic, we have more than 40 verses, which is the bulk of our content. To generalize it, righteous people are rewarded with good and wicked people are rewarded with bad. Now, as I am always careful to note, this is a generality. The Proverbs are not intended as mathematical absolutes. There is not a one-to-one correlation. Do good, get good. Do bad, get bad. But most of the time, averaged out over everyone, this is the case. So what are the rewards and consequences? We have several proverbs which suggest that the righteous live long lives and or the wicked die early. Among those are Proverbs 10:2, 10:16, 10:27, 11:4, 11:19, 11:30, 12:28, 16:17, 17:20, 19:23, 21:21, 29:16, and 19:16, which says, "Whoever keeps the commandment keeps his life, he who despises his ways will die." One verse of note here is Proverbs 11:30. It is noteworthy because it is tricky to translate. For the other quotes here, I've been using the English Standard Version, but I think that the New International Version probably has the best rendering of this one. "The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and the one who is wise saves lives. When trouble comes, the righteous survive them, but the wicked do not." See Proverbs 10:25. "When the wicked dies, his hope dies out with him." See Proverbs 11:7. "Not only do the righteous live, but the righteous receive good blessings and avoid curses. Contrary to that, the wicked who do live get curses and miss blessings." Among those verses are 10:6, 11:31, 12:21, 13:21, 14:22, 22:8, and 28:18. "Among the blessings that the good get is plenty of food. The righteous get enough to eat, while the wicked go hungry." See 10:3 and 13:25. "Not only do the righteous get blessings, but they also get what they want, while the wicked get what they dread." See 10:24 or 10:28. "Even the wealth that the wicked accumulate ends up being unprofitable to them." See Proverbs 10:2. In fact, in a verse agreeable to the idea of God's sovereignty over human affairs, Proverbs 16:4 tells us, "The Lord has made everything for its purpose, even the wicked for the day of trouble." The wicked are overthrown, uprooted, or pushed out of the land, while the righteous are secure and remain, and are established and stand firm. See Proverbs 10:9, 10:30, 12:3, 12:7, or 14:11. Proverbs 21:12 says, "The righteous one observes the house of the wicked. He throws the wicked down to ruin." Generally, the righteous will receive the support and favor of others, while people will turn away from the wicked. Proverbs 18:3 says, "When wickedness comes, contempt comes also, and with dishonor comes disgrace." Proverbs 21:18 says, "The wicked is a ransom for the righteous, and the traitor for the upright." When the two come into conflict, the wicked are made to bow down before the righteous. See 14:19. By virtue of his righteousness, a good man will have valuable things to say, but a bad man has nothing worthwhile in him to say. See Proverbs 10:20. What wicked men do have to say is slander against righteous people, but righteous people are protected by the truth about themselves, presuming, of course, that the society around them have knowledge. See Proverbs 11:9. The result of all of this is that the righteous will rejoice. See 13:9 and 29:6. The blessings of the righteous will also extend to their children. See 11:21. A few other verses on the results of righteousness and wickedness include Proverbs 17:13, which says, "If anyone returns evil for good, evil will not depart from his house." Proverbs 11:27. "Whoever diligently seeks good seeks favor, but evil comes to him who searches for it." And Proverbs 28:10, "Whoever misleads the upright into an evil way will fall into his own pit, but the blameless will have a goodly inheritance." And last but not least in the results category, we have Proverbs 17:19, which is a bit confusing. "Whoever loves transgression loves strife. He who makes his door high seeks destruction." The first part seems straightforward enough. If you love committing sins and harming other people, then you must love having strife, because that's going to be the outcome. But the high door part is a bit strange. Various translations have attempted to make sense of this by saying things like, from the KJV, "He that exalteth his gate seeketh destruction," and from the NIV, "Whoever builds a high gate invites destruction." It seems obvious enough to me that we have something idiomatic here, and we could use the context of the first half of the verse as a guide to understanding the rest of it. Maybe this is some kind of military reference. You build a big gate as if to thumb your nose at an opposing army and they might just attack. Meaning, don't thumb your nose at people and you won't end up fighting with them. Or maybe to exalt one's gate or to have a high door means to think too highly of oneself. Maybe to be a braggart and so to invite this disdain of others. Or maybe it speaks to military conquest. To exalt one's gate might be to unjustly overpower an opposing city. You go around picking fights and you get destroyed. In any of those cases, the same general idea comes through. Don't look down on others, don't antagonize them, don't start trouble with them, and you won't have trouble. Understanding then the value of righteousness to an individual, how do people respond to that individual's righteousness? Proverbs 29:16 tells us that, "When the wicked increase, transgression increases." That makes sense. More wicked people will do more bad things, and the problem will be exponential because the wicked will have more power to act wickedly and fewer people to stand in their way. As wickedness becomes socially acceptable, more people will become wicked. So there's a feedback loop there. Wickedness begets more wickedness. In general, the city will celebrate when there is good for the righteous and bad for the wicked. Proverbs 11:10 says, "When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices, and when the wicked perish, there are shouts of gladness." That makes sense. Righteousness helps everyone, and wickedness hurts everyone. As we read before, the righteous will save the city, and the wicked will overthrow it. Proverbs 14:32 bolsters the idea that people are glad when the wicked die. It reads, "The wicked is overthrown through his evil doing, but the righteous finds refuge in his death." Proverbs 14:32 bolsters the idea that people are glad when the wicked die. It reads, "The wicked is overthrown through his evil doing, but the righteous finds refuge in his death." So the more wicked people there are, the more worried good people are by them. When wicked people die, good people breathe a sigh of relief. The message of Proverbs 28:12 is comparable. When the righteous triumph, there is great glory, but when the wicked rise, people hide themselves. Indeed, when good people win, they grow in power and ability, and they use that power for the good of their society. People glory in that. But when evil people win, they ignore the law and they use their power for their own self-interest, and people fear that. Of course, not everyone likes it when the good win out. Proverbs 29:10 tells us that, "Bloodthirsty men hate one who is blameless and seek the life of the upright." So bear that in mind. Generally, people like righteousness, but if they're evil people, they'll hate righteousness. But finally, on the whole, people will generally remember the righteous fondly, but not so the wicked. Proverbs 10:7 says, "The memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot." This week, we will skip over lengthy application because the passages are so directly applicable that little explanation is necessary. But it is good to review the general principles. A righteous person is the one who humbly submits himself in obedience to God's laws. He leads others in the right way and does not compromise with the wicked. He thinks about doing beneficial things, he talks about doing beneficial things, and he uses his resources on doing beneficial things. God sees his good deeds and he rewards him. Not only that, but the nature of the good things that he does are self-rewarding. As a result, the good man survives calamities and lives a long life full of blessings. He increases in wealth and knowledge and security. He overpowers the wicked and he leaves a blessing and inheritance to his children. Good people create a good society, and good people celebrate the success of the good. For the wicked, it is the opposite. They do not submit to God's laws, and they do things that are harmful to themselves and to others. God sees and responds. The wicked live lives of suffering and then die, and when they die, good people celebrate that. Again, I will emphasize that this is not always going to be the case. It is a generality, and as a generality, it is true. So the choice is yours. You can choose to have a long life full of blessings and honor, or you can have a short life of misery and disgrace. My recommendation to you is that you choose to live a righteous life. To conclude then, among the major themes of the book of Proverbs is the theme of righteousness, which is about an eighth of the content. And examining major themes one by one, righteousness seemed like the best place to start because it aligns so well with the idea of the fear of Jehovah and hatred of evil as the beginning of wisdom. This idea also harmonizes perfectly with the context of other scriptures, like the Law of Moses, which we have examined previously and which have set precedents and priorities for us. The righteous are obedient to God, and thus they receive his blessings. Choose life, then, and live.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.